I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So the legend of Tom Brady is growing and continues to grow. I broke a story, I guess it was yesterday, on Brady's knee injury. Now, we know that he had had surgery in the offseason a couple weeks after the Super Bowl. He said it was fairly serious surgery, the most serious since 08 when he tore his ACL. But there really hasn't been much details about that. You know, we've asked Brady about it, and he's like, I'm kind of old school. I don't really want to talk about injuries, that sort of thing. Well, it turns out, and I reported this in the Tampa Bay Times on TampaBay.com, that Tom Brady played with a torn medial collateral ligament in his left knee all season long. And it's one that he had suffered in his final year with the New England Patriots. It got worse. You know, his decision was basically, when he came to Tampa Bay, he had this injury, and it wasn't as severe as it was at the end of the year, but it was like, look, it's COVID, you know? It's hard to get to have elective surgery at that time. And on top of that, he was trying to get with his teammates, learn an offense. You know, there really wasn't time if he was going to shift to being the Bucs starting quarterback to try to get this done. And he felt confident that, you know, him and his trainer, Alex Guerrero, I guess, could manage this, manage the pain, manage whatever they had to do to get him through the season. And, in fact, we know how it ended. I mean, the guy has confetti once again falling on his head, and he's got his seventh Super Bowl ring. But it wasn't easy because this injury, as you would imagine, a football season and the toll it takes on a, you know, 43-year-old quarterback, he took some hits. I mean, he was in a new offense. A lot of deep drops, a lot of down-the-field throws early on. He was getting hit a bit. And so that knee got worse and worse as the year went on. And we know this because towards the end of the season, and Bruce Arians does this with a lot of his veteran players. He gives them days off, especially late in the year as the season wears on. And Tom would take Wednesdays off, probably like the last eight regular season, you know, Wednesdays of the year. And they were usually just deemed maintenance days. In fact, he wouldn't even appear on the injury report other than did not practice. And so there was no injury affixed to his reason for not practicing. So there might be some, you know, some, I know Mike Florio has written about this and thinks there might be, the Bucs might be in a little bit of trouble here about hiding an injury. But the fact is, he played every game. He didn't miss any time. And the only time he did miss was at practice, and there might be a rub there. But pretty amazing. I mean, if you think about it, I remember all the talk of the Super Bowl was how Patrick Mahomes had the bad toe. He was going to need surgery after the season. Of course, he ran around. Didn't look like it bothered him in the Super Bowl. Turns out Tom Brady had a torn MCL.
Well, I guess now we know what Giselle was telling Tom when she said, what more do you have to prove? You just won a Super Bowl with a tear in your MCL.
One leg. That's right.
We didn't know that at the time, but.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, and look, we know he takes care of his body, and we know, you know, the TB12 and all the plyometrics and things. But now, you know, and Brady said this. He goes, look, I had to spend a lot of time that I am glad I won't have to spend this year on my knee just getting ready to play. And now we know why. I mean, the guy had an MCL tear. I mean, that is not an easy injury. I mean, that's, you know, the medial collateral ligament basically is the stability of your knee. You know, it prevents it from hyperextending, from going backwards. And so, you know, it can really bend in the wrong direction. It's the one that runs along the inner edge of the knee. It connects the shin and the thigh bones and keeps the knee stable and working when you're moving around. Now, you know, couple things. One, it shows that you can play on a lot of stuff if you're a pocket passer, right? Like learn quarterbacks how to win from the pocket, and you know, those sort of injuries may not knock you out for the year. But you know, two, it I mean, not only did he leave New England after 20 years, not only was he a 43-year-old quarterback, not only did he come to a franchise that hadn't sniffed the playoffs in 12 years or won a playoff game since the 03 Super Bowl, not only did he have to learn a new offense, a new coach, new teammates, and do it during a pandemic with no training camp, no preseason games, but after going 7-5, he won 8 in a row with a torn medial collateral MCL. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. I mean, that's the stuff of legends, right? That now you know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey, the great Paul Harvey, used to say.
It is. But as you broke the story today, I had a few questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Did the Buccaneers know about his knee when they signed him?
Well, that's I don't know that answer, unfortunately. I wasn't able to, you know, some guys are still scattered on vacation, and so there wasn't a and I will say this. I don't know that I will be told whether they did or not, because they can very easily hide behind HIPAA, I suppose. I mean, they're going to have to answer to the NFL. They don't have to answer to me. But you have to imagine that when a player, you know, Tom Brady was a free agent and he agreed to terms, you know, how that went down. You know, there were two or three teams involved and it was going to be the Chargers, the Bucks, and then all of a sudden it was like, wow, word out of New England that Tom Brady has decided to come to Tampa Bay. Remember, he met with Robert Kraft, talked on the phone to Bill Belichick. And so there were news stories about how he made his decision and he's going to sign with Tampa. But a bunch of days passed and there was no contract. And he was in New York City at the time, or New York, visiting his oldest son. And this was when the world was shut down. You know, you couldn't go anywhere. There was no vaccines. There was nothing. And the teams, the facilities were shut down and everybody was sent home. So it wasn't like the doctors could examine Tom Brady. They were not making contact with any players or each other. And so what Brady had to do, and it took a number of days, and I'm sure you remember that there was a lag time. He was like, well, he hadn't signed the contract yet. Well, you know, people, if here in Tampa, when we don't see contracts, they get nervous, Bill Parcells. So there was some nervy days there. And then he had to go get an independent doctor, one that he knew in New York. And then the Bucs doctors had to take a look at, you know, whatever it is they do to give this guy a physical. One would presume that if you're getting a physical to play football, they're going to look at your joints. You know, they may not do an MRI unless there's reason to, but they're going to move your legs around and make sure that everything is attached and whatnot. But I don't know. See, I don't know. The Bucs will have to answer to that at some point, but we don't know how this would not have been a thing, you know, in a physical exam. And if so, I go back to the mere fact that Joe Tryon, you know, had a torn meniscus and had to have surgery before he could pass his physical.
Or is this a case of, you know, think back to Nick Saban in Miami with Drew Brees. The Dolphins doctors wouldn't clear him, but maybe, you know, obviously somebody else's did. You know, I mean, doctors can have different assessments of it.
No, that happens. That definitely happens. And maybe the Bucs did clear him. Maybe they were aware of it and said it's not something that's going to prevent you from playing. And remember now, he played on it in New England, you know. So it wasn't as if this was a new injury. I'm sure it didn't get better with time. But if he had this injury in New England, which is my reporting, that's where it occurred, and he played all the way to the final game. He played, got beat in the playoffs. His last throw was an interception in Tennessee. If he played and didn't miss games, and he didn't, he played every game of the season, then whatever it was wasn't going to prevent him from playing football because he had proven it. He'd played a year on it. So that might have been part of the consideration too, is that, yeah, you know, we all have something, right? Like if you go examine me right now, the doctors probably wouldn't let me play anything. But the fact of the matter is that this guy's played 20 seasons. You're not going to find a clean body of a quarterback who's played 20 years. But is it going to stop him? Is there something there that would prevent him from playing football? And I guess you could argue that the Bucs doctors and whoever did the physical for Brady concluded that no, it won't. And you know what? It didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he played every game.
If they were informed of it and knew, then
right.
And they may have made that assessment. They were correct at the end. Because
yeah,
he did finish the season. He played every game.
Yeah, it was not something that was going to prevent him from playing the game or possibly endanger him to the point where he can't get out of harm's way. He can't protect himself. You know, that's what you look for in injuries is is this something that's going to put him in harm's way? Is he at risk of you know, further damaging that injury or making himself vulnerable for another hit? And so the conclusion was, well, you just saw him on film. He played a whole season with New England. There's nothing to stop him from playing a season on it for us. So, and that's what he did. But, again, wear and tear. If you remember early in the season, there was a lot of hits. He was throwing the ball down the field a lot, and that's why they had to adapt the offense. It took some time. But I remember him taking days off, and I remember, you know, I couldn't see, you know, physically, you know, whether he was favoring one leg or favoring the leg that he had the sleeve on. That's the same leg that he had the ACL tear on in 08. So he always wears a neoprene wrap on that knee. So just seeing him walking around with that wrap on doesn't say anything. It just says, yeah, that's the knee, that's the ACL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there. Listen, it's injuries, as you know, in every league has its own unique sort of challenges. And I think if teams had their druthers, they wouldn't disclose anything. But there's also HIPAA laws. There's different things that are governing that, but you know, the league will decide whether the Bucks ran afoul of their policy or not. And the fact, again, I just keep going back to this, he didn't miss a game, and the practices he had off may have been in part or in total because we were told as much that it was just a veteran maintenance day. They did it with Ndamukong Suh, they did it with Jason Pierre-Paul, they did it with Lavonte David, they did it with all those guys who wound up playing the whole season. And, you know, in the case of some of them, like Pierre Paul, they would put on the injury report that it was his knee because he had off-season knee surgery. And that's the purpose of him not practicing. But with Brady, when he wouldn't practice, it was just not injury-related, you know, just maintenance day, whatever. But now we know that this was a concern. But
see, Bruce Arians from now on should just put Brady on the injury list every week, like Bill Belichick for years.
You know what? That's what New England did for about 80-something weeks, I think. They had the same sort of thing happened up there, and so Belichick decided to make a mockery of it by listing Brady with a shoulder injury for like 5 years. Yep.
That's probable, you know? Every time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you could just do the whole, you know, head, shoulders, knees, and toes, you know, and just put them all on there every day because everything hurts. What do they tell you about football and hockey? This time of year, everybody's injured, you know?
Yeah, nobody's 100%.
It turns out it's true. Look at that damn hockey team. You know, I mean, geez, the walking wounded. But all I know this is that he was healthy enough to throw for 4,633 yards and 40 touchdowns. And then in the postseason, he added another 1,061 yards and 10 touchdowns. And so, you know, if it bothered him, he had a funny way of showing it. But it really is interesting because, listen, it does the player no good to say I have a knee problem or it's my MCL or be specific. Obviously, I'm sure the gamblers would like to know. That's why we do injury reports anyway. And Brady, I'll say this about Brady: he has always sort of, you know, accepted that injuries are part of the game. He knows he's been fortunate to have missed just the one season with the ACL. He knows what that's like. It's no fun to be on the outside looking in. And furthermore, and this is just reality of a football player, and particularly one like Brady, is that you don't want to take a rep off. I mean, understand that Tom Brady, you know, for as great as he is, and we know how great he is now, was still number 199 out of Michigan, even though he went to the Rose Bowl and was the MVP and all that stuff. I mean, but, you know, he's a sixth-round pick. He got his job because Drew Bledsoe got the hell knocked out of him. And that's how most players at any position, particularly quarterbacks, but most players get their jobs. The guy in front of them got hurt. They had to take a rep. They had to go into a game. Same thing at the right tackle spot or the wide receiver spot. You know, the old Bud Grant, best ability is availability. You get your job only one of two ways in the NFL. The guy in front of you gets hurt or he's not productive. And sometimes he's not productive because he is hurt and he's trying to hang in there and play. So, you know, Tom Brady, of all people, right, built his career because he got a break. You know, he was never going to take Drew Bledsoe's job. Not that year, you know. And then when Bledsoe came back, it was a toss-up who Belichick was going to play. Certainly made the right decision, by the way. But Brady was not, you know, is not one to advertise, oh, yeah, you know, I got this, I got that. He will go out there until he can't. And, you know, it is now going to be part of his lore. Just like, you know, Nikita Kucherov or Alex Killorn trying to play with a rod in his leg. You know, like all that stuff that you find out later only adds to the legacies. You know, it's part of this story. It's part of, you know, the pursuit of a team goal. And I got to tell you, I knew it was bad. I mean, he had said as much, but then when you really see, you know, torn MCL, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that knocks guys out sometimes for weeks or sometimes for the year. Quickly, before we get to Tom Jones, and we're going to discuss what would prevent the Bucs from repeating Tom Brady injury, for example. Also, whether John Cooper is now the leading face on the Mount Rushmore of Tampa Bay coaches. Speaking of the Lightning, it's good to know that in injuries that the Stanley Cup's upper body injury has been fixed.
Yeah, it was truly just day to day. I mean, he missed, 2 days here, basically. And he'll be on the road for the start of the Celebration Tour in New Jersey today with Ross Colton.
That's awesome, by the way. I guess they got him a first-class ticket and got him up there and back right away, right? I mean, are they chartered a plane?
Like, yeah, apparently the Cup doesn't need a quarantine, so, you know, it was okay to get to Canada and back.
Yeah, because nobody else can. And he must have his own private plane because, you know, the airlines aren't running those schedules. Yeah. But, yeah, Ross Colton, who, I mean, how would you like to start your career this way? Join the Lightning about mid-season, big splash with some goals.
Scored in your first game.
Scored in your first game, you know, and then you get in the Stanley Cup finals, you score 4 goals. Oh, but you got the only goal in Game 7. Are you kidding me?
The Stanley Cup game-winning goal.
Are you kidding me?
Ross Colton.
Ross Colton, baby. Yeah. I mean, that's not a trivia question that most people will get wrong in Tampa Bay if they witnessed anything regarding the Stanley Cup. So that's really cool. So he gets – now, I wonder how they do that. Do they do it rookie to
– No, because next it goes to Kevin Shattenkirk, who from last year never got his day with the Cup.
You think it's a blind draw or
– I'm guessing it's –
regional?
I'm guessing it's based on, you know
– because Colton's going to do a neat – he's going back to New Jersey, right?
I think first of all, I don't think the Cup at this point is going to travel outside the U.S.
Okay.
I don't think. I mean, Canada's still kind of locked down. I don't think they're going to send it to Europe at this point.
Right.
That doesn't mean that won't change, but, you know, like if say Victor Hedman wants to go to Sweden with it, or if, you know, if Kucherov wanted to take it to Russia or whatever. And that happens in a normal year. I don't think they're allowing that. And I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah.
But my guess is it's based on players are like, hey, man, these are the dates that work for me. I'm sure there's a master schedule somewhere that they're plotting this out. I think it's Colton and Shattenkirk first, and then I have no idea what goes on after that. But
probably some guys got seniority if they wanted on a specific day. If you're Steven Stamkos or you're
and it may depend on, you know, hey, when your family and friends can get together and who you want to spend the day, and you know, so I'm sure someone's a master schedule keeper at the Lightning, or maybe it's Philip Pritchard, although I'm guessing some of the Lightning's helping in that, but.
Yeah.
But it's going to make us, which it didn't get to do a celebration tour last year. I mean, it kind of stayed, I think, in Tampa or Canada, and, you know, it went out to a few things, but not really publicly. I mean, I think Ross Colton, if I read properly, is taking it to the rink he skated as a kid for people to come
That's
take
so
pictures
cool.
with it and stuff.
That's so cool.
You know, in Robbinsville, New Jersey. So, you know, finally getting back to some normalcy with that stuff, so.
I think that stuff is really cool. I that's one of the better traditions in sports. And I don't, you know, like I said, the Lombardi Trophy doesn't have quite, as trophy goes, it's still a brilliant trophy, but it doesn't have quite the tradition or the history because there's not just one.
There's one.
They make one every year.
And the names on
multiple
it, too.
Ones.
I mean, they put your names on it.
Right. They got all the names of all the players and all of that. So That's not part of the Stanley Cup or part of the Lombardi Trophy either. But I think it's the coolest trophy in sports, and I'm glad they fixed it. I wouldn't want Pat Maroon to have to live with that. Would you allow him to have it again?
Absolutely. I mean, he's three cup guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Yeah. But look, it's not like this is the first. I read the Red Wings. I think
they dented it up
at Chris Chelios party. It basically fell off a table or was pushed off or slid off or.
It fell off a table.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know.
Or was it pushed?
Yeah, well.
Nobody knows for sure.
You know, but it's not the first time it's been. I mean, look, the thing's 100 years old.
Yeah.
It gets drank out of and lifted and carried and everything else. I'm sure it's probably been dented more than we know.
If that cup could talk.
Woo. Or the cup keepers. That's all you need is the cup keepers.
Well, that too. Yeah. That's true. They know where they have all the secrets. There's no question about that. And they have to have good contacts in order to keep that stuff quiet. They must be well trusted to do that job, you know.
Yeah, well, I would think. Yeah, there's some non-disclosure agreements among other things there.
Yeah, what happens with the cup stays with the cup. Yeah. Okay. Well,
and speaking of injuries, did you see who is lightly
tossing
throwing a baseball around? I wouldn't know. I don't think Kevin Cash quite said throwing, but
tossing. Well, you know how they do it, Steve. I mean, you don't start with a baseball. It's like a sock thing first, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So he's taking some steps even to get to where he's lost, lightly throwing a baseball.
And we're talking about Tyler Glass now.
Tyler Glass now, that's right.
So he was hoping to come back before the end of the season.
And listen, I mean, everybody roots for a guy. I mean, he was off to such a great start and was so dominant. And you hate that to think that, according to him at least, this whole temporary obsession with, you know, the sticky substance that pitchers were using to control the ball and the spin rates, and we saw the averages plummet. Then they went, you know, 180 degrees the other way and were checking pitchers and they were stripping on the mound. And, you know, it got so absurd that Glasnow just went cold turkey one day and he said that, you know, having to grip the ball differently, that's what caused the strain on the elbow, and he suffered the injury. So you hate to think that his season is over that way, and if it turns into Tommy John next season as well. So you're rooting like hell that the guy can get back on the mound and avoid, you know, that calamity. But if I'm the Rays, first of all, how cautious are you going to be, right? Very. And then the other thing is I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket. I mean, I still think that they're going to have to anticipate he's not going to be available. And even if he was, you know, to what extent? You're not going to be able to build. There's not enough time by the time he were to come back that you could build him up to any sort of innings that would really, you know, maybe three, four. I mean, I can't imagine.
No, but even if he's giving you two or three innings every 3 days, well, let's say. I mean,
yeah, you know. I mean, it's better than not having him. Don't get me wrong. If he can be the same pitcher, if he has the same stuff and you're not risking further injury and all that, we're just so far from that. You know what I mean? That I'm glad. This is good. This is a good sign, but it's a baby step, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know you got to take them. It's just I am less than very optimistic. I saw where Chris Archer is taking an assignment in Durham as well, or not assignment, a rehab start. I'm starting to throw down there. Is probably going to start down there. So maybe they get Arch back. Look, there's there's a number of pitchers. Nick Anderson's another one that they could see before the end of the year.
Yep, he's starting his process back. Oliver Drake apparently had a little bit of
Oliver
a setback.
Drake,
but
yeah,
had
not
a
good
neck or something issue, that slight setback. But yeah, they're hopefully going to get some guys back soon.
So the Rays begin their series in Atlanta. Their start of the second half.
Yeah, and their All Stars are going to have to do some rapid testing before they head to Atlanta.
What a story that! You know what? It made my stomach turn. I was out getting dinner, and the story came across, and I was listening to Ian Fitzsimmons. I was listening to some guy on ESPN Radio, but and he made the point. He's like, please God. Because, first of all, I didn't think we were ever at a point where COVID would stop a game at this point, especially baseball, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those teams are all mostly 85% vaccinated. We saw the Yankees come into Tampa Bay. I think they had four or five guys that were under contact tracing, coaches, whatnot. They didn't stop the game. They played the game. They played the series. We've not seen that. And I, with this new variant, which is burning up the country again, for those of you who are not vaccinated, I'll get on my soapbox. I don't care what your politics are. I don't know why it's political. But, you know, if you have a good medical reason or a personal reason you don't want to have a vaccine, that's fine. However, we haven't had that problem in sports for a while. I know the NFL still has its challenges trying to get their players vaccinated. But, you know, stadiums are open now to full capacity for the most part, and we've been rolling. And to see a game canceled between the Red Sox and the Yankees, which was, by the way, the only sporting event on television.
Not so. You know, I'm watching the Gold Cup Group B, United States versus Martinique, as we tape this. So,
well,
United States is up 2-0.
That's my bad for not
a win today,
that.
And they advanced to the knockout stage of the CONCACAF Gold Cup. So I know you're a big fan.
Well, no, I'm not, actually. I didn't know it was on. But if it was on and I knew it was on, it might be something I would watch because there's nothing else. I can't find anything else. But to have this game canceled is sort of a sobering, oh, no. You know, I know they were having their Big 8 media days in Texas, Big 12 media days. That's how old I am. Big 12 media days in Texas. And the commissioner down there of the league said he wants every player and every coach vaccinated. And he knows that probably that's the goal, and it probably won't happen. But he said, you know, they've decided, look, if your team, for whatever reason, doesn't have enough players because of COVID and you can't play, it's a forfeit. They're not, you know, rescheduling games. And
we're not going to have Tuesday night football this year?
No, not in the Big 12. They're not. And I, you know, they plan on playing in front of fans. I mean, these are live events. You're going to have to give refunds, and you know it's going to be your responsibility to have, you know, your protocols or your players vaccinated or whatever in place. And then if it sweeps through your campus or sweeps through your football team, oh well. That's his stance anyway. We'll see. But it was a gut punch. It was sort of like, oh, please, not this again. And it follows with what we see on television, that the increases in cases among unvaccinated people primarily is, and then also vaccinated. I saw where Rich Eisen of the NFL Network, who's had two Johnson & Johnson shots, I believe, or maybe they had one for Johnson & Johnson, maybe it was Moderna, one of those, he caught this variant of COVID and was symptomatic. You know, they weren't major, thank God, but he caught it again. So it's out there. And you know, you hope that the Tampa Bay coaches or the Rays, or certainly their all-stars, Zunino and Wendell and Kittredge, you know, don't have a situation where they can't come back and play. But we'll have to see.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, Tom Jones, you know, when we were doing radio and other endeavors, even in the Tampa Bay Times, frequently the Mount Rushmores come up, right?
Yeah, I love that. I love Mount Rushmore conversations.
Of sports. They're always great debates, and depending on the question. But I got one for you now, because I think we have to get out our chisels and maybe alter some things. John Cooper has now won two Stanley Cup titles back-to-back at that, has been to Eastern Conference Finals and a Stanley Cup Final to boot and lost. So if you look at his overall body of work, I mean, this guy is sort of the mayor of Tampa Bay at this time, because his teams are always in the mix, and now they have two titles. Now, having said that, I've got a list of personalities here lined up in Tampa Bay, people like Tony Dungy, Joe Maddon, John Gruden. Let me ask John Tortorella.
Kevin Cash. Bruce Arians
at this point. All of them champions in their own right. Some of them champions. Tom Jones, is John Cooper the biggest face to have the pole position on Mount Rushmore of Tampa Bay coaches?
Yes. Short answer is yes. I mean, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's back to back. He's won back to back. He's the only guy with multiple championships. Mm-hmm. Look, he took over a team that was lousy. I mean, they fired their coach. He took over at the end of a season.
Well, now hold on. They did fire their coach, but the year before that, their coach went to the Eastern Conference Finals.
But
Guy Boucher.
It was a couple years prior.
It was a couple years prior.
Was it two years prior?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I see your point.
It's not as if they weren't dungy bad.
No, yeah. They weren't as bad as the Bucks were when.
In fact, some people were surprised that they fired Guy Boucher at the time.
Yeah, I wrote a column at the time arguing against it. I said that it was as much on Steve Eiserman as it is on Guy Boucher. Now history has proven that I might have been wrong about that, because Steve Eiserman's gone on to have great success and Guy Boucher not as much. But I mean, it's not as if Cooper took over. Now, Cooper's not Gruden either. You know, maybe he wasn't Dungy in terms of what he inherited, but he didn't inherit what Gruden inherited either. But he won
back. Joe Madden.
Or Joe Madden, you know, or Kevin Cash, you know. Joe Madden from the opposite end. They had a couple pieces like Carl Crawford and Rocco Baldelli, but yeah, not much more than that. But I mean, I think scoreboard, right? I mean, that's ultimately, I think, what this comes down to. And you mentioned it too, Rick. He took over a team that it was not very good. We maybe not horrible, but not good. Took him to the playoffs the first year, his first full season. They got swept, but they had no goaltending basically that year. At least for the playoffs. And then after that, again, three Stanley Cup appearances. He's been to the finals three times. He's won two of them. He's been to two other Eastern Conference finals. The times that they went to the Eastern Conference finals, they lost to teams that went on to win the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, this team came within, you know, a few goals here and there of playing in six Stanley Cups. And maybe winning a couple more of them. So I think it's a no-brainer. I don't even think it's close at this point.
And I'll just say this. Two short years ago, they have the best record in hockey, one of the best ever, score the most points, whatever. And they get swept by Columbus. And despite all that previous success that you mentioned, but not since, John Cooper, I mean, some would argue, hey, maybe it's time to get a new coach.
I don't know that
they ever thought that, but I thought it a few times. I mean, obviously they signed him to an extension instead, but
well, that was a controversy at the time. Yeah, you're not alone in thinking that. I never thought that. I always thought that he was a guy that they should stick with. But the year after they lost to Columbus, which would have been last season, or not this past season, but the first cup year under Cooper. Yeah. If they had got knocked out in the first round again, now you start to say, okay, things aren't changing. It becomes Tony Dungy.
Right.
It's to the point where he's like, you know, he's a good coach. You know, he's probably going to go somewhere else and have great success, but it's not working here. And the fact that he, you know, and look, I covered John Cooper a lot. I know him very well. I got along with him very well. I thought he was a really good coach. We had a pretty good relationship. There were people, and I don't know that it was accurate, but there are some people who may have saw a different side of him, who thought he was arrogant, thought it was sort of, it's sort of not sort of a my way or the highway type of attitude, but he felt like very rigid in his beliefs, and this is going to work because it's worked everywhere else I've been. So I do get that sense that there would have been some people, if he had been fired, wouldn't have been all that broken up about it.
Well, even today, I'll just say this, okay? I'm way far away from Amalie Arena most nights. And, you know, while my two girls are the biggest hockey fans on earth, I look at the game a little different, you know, having not covered it and all that. But why is Joe Madden and Tony Dungy so beloved as opposed to a John Cooper who has done more? And maybe that will change, right? Is it the personality? Is it the sport? Because just in my mind, and I don't disagree with anything you said, by the way. I think he is, you know, if you're a coach, it's about winning. It's about winning championships. and he's got it all over anybody that's been here, period. Now, Bruce Arians wins another Super Bowl, we can have that discussion, okay? However, for and you know this, I don't think there'll be a time when Joe Maddon isn't beloved in Tampa Bay. I don't think there'll be a time when Tony Dungy isn't beloved in Tampa Bay. Both of them own homes here still. Mm-hmm. I don't know that John Cooper will ever reach that sort of fuzzy status.
I don't know. Maybe.
Am I wrong?
I don't know. I think he's close to getting there now because now he's won back-to-back cups. Yeah. I think he's likable. I think fans like him. I like him. I liked him as a coach. I don't know that.
And I don't have anything against him. I'm not.
Yeah. No.
You know,
I'm not sure all media is crazy about him.
It might be the sport, Tom, because here's the thing. Like with managing baseball, first of all, it's 162 games. Okay. You see him walk out there on the mound, take the ball, right? You see him in the dugout, lots of shots of him talking to players, making lineup changes. You know, there's tangible managing going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the casual hockey fan, I don't know when they change their lines, what the matchups are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
I see guys coming over the walls. Like, he's standing there behind the bench, pretty much chewing his gum.
Mm-hmm.
Leans over, talks to a few guys. There's not an active, you know, he's not allowed on the ice. He's not going to go out and take the stick or the puck away from somebody. I mean, maybe it's the sport itself that, most of his coaching goes on behind closed doors, or at least the fans aren't there to watch it. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it just seems to me that we've gotten a whole lot more Joe Maddon and a whole lot more of whoever's coaching the Buccaneers than we do with John Cooper. Whatever, at least to Ned's this point. Now, I like the guy. Don't know him. I like him. I like that he wore a Gronk T-shirt. Thought that was good.
I tell you what, Rick, he's one of the smartest human beings I've been around. And I don't, it's weird. Like, there's some guys you vibe with, and mm-hmm. Cooper and I, we're on the same wavelength.
You're one of the smartest guys too? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I think I understood.
Is that what you just said?
I think that's what I heard. Well, know that. Yeah. Like Dirk Cutter and I did not get along.
Oh,
clearly.
So he wasn't smart. Is that what you just said? Because that's what I heard.
No, I'm not saying that. I was going to make a joke, and then next thing you know, it's going to end up in the Padoka Times or whatever.
Padoka?
Where's he from? What's the name of that town?
What?
Where's Padoka? He from? It's South Carolina, North Dakota, whatever the name of
the same state, pretty much.
Whatever town. But I felt like I was always on the same wavelength as Cooper. So I sort of got him. I understood him, and we joked a lot. And he'd joke, and he'd call me doom. Me and Martin Finley, he calls doom and gloom because if we ever wrote a negative article, but
one were you?
That's what I asked him one time. I go, which one am I? He goes, which one's worse? So I doom. So it became doom. So it was doom. I was doom. So, because he determined doom was worse than gloom. But the thing with Cooper that I so admire, it must have to do with coaching, Rick, is the past 2 years of not losing consecutive games in the playoffs. That's an amazing statistic.
It is.
That they've been, 15-0, whatever it was.
Because they have Andrei Vasilevskiy, yes.
Perhaps. But, they never put two clunker games together back-to-back.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
And there has to be something. It has to be something to do with coaching. And I saw back when I was covering the team, and when I went to the finals against Chicago, there were a bunch of games during that playoff run where, they lost a couple of games. You're like, how did you lose that game? You're home, and you get – and then they would win on the road, a game that they weren't supposed to win. So they won a game 5 in New York, won a game 7 in New York, won a big game, a 6 in Detroit during that run. So I think that has to do with coaching. I think that definitely has
to do with it. It has everything to do with coaching.
What's interesting, though, Rick, and not to get into a huge Mount Rushmore, because I know we want to talk a little bit more about the Lightning, is I think Cooper's a no-brainer on the Mount Rushmore. Now you only got 3 other spots left. Now it's a fight. Because now you got, the only other ones to win championships are Gruden, Tortorella, and Arians. But that means you leave Dungy off. That means you leave Maddon off. Mm-hmm. That means you leave Kevin Cash off. I'm not sure that's fair. I don't know that Dungy shouldn't be on the Mount Rushmore. Like somebody, yeah. you can't have them all. It's only four. You know, I mean, Tortorella took right, over a team that was horrible. And what?
Yeah,
and
it's won, I don't know. I don't know where Tortorella even gets up there. I don't know that he gets up there. I mean, maybe because
a championship after taking over a team that was the Steve Ludzik horrible Lightning.
All right, well, we're going championships. Tony Dungy's out and John Gruden's in. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
It does?
I always said Gruden should be in the Ring of Honor before Dungy because the championships matter, man. I don't care. All Dungy's team, what? I don't know. Gruden won it.
I'm not saying it was Dungy's team, and I don't know that Tony ever wins it. But I do know this. I know what was here when he got here.
It's right.
And look, Warren Sapp was on the roster. John Lynch was on the roster. And Derek Brooks was on the roster. They weren't playing like those three guys that we came to know as Hall of Famers, but they were here. So I'm not going to tell you they didn't have any talent, but 12 seasons of double digit losing.
Oh, there's no question. Okay. There's no question. I mean,
nobody turned this around from a Bucks organization more than Tony Dungy. No one.
No, not John Gruden. No doubt about it.
And I give John all the credit in the world, and so do his players. But based on what you're saying, and you said you've written this already to some degree, that if we're going championships, Dungy's out and Gruden's in.
Well, maybe Dungy's
in. Oh, by the way, Bruce Arians in too.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
Over Joe Madden.
Right, over Kevin Cash. What did Joe Kevin Madden do Cash. That Kevin Cash didn't do? You know, he went to a World Series.
They both went to six games, right?
Yeah. No, Madden didn't even get to six.
Madden went to five, right?
Yeah. Took like 40 days and 40 nights to play that game five. But
that's right. Hours, he spent Noah's more time Ark. In the World Series.
Exactly. But it's an interesting conversation. Like, and you know what's amazing
is
that,
that's
like,
why I don't – but I don't think, you know, I don't think you can base it solely on championships, in my personal belief. I think that's too shallow of a way to look at it.
I understand what you're saying about that. But my point would be is that I think Tortorella belongs on that list. He took over a team that was
horrible. George Washington's up there. Yes, he was president, but he was the father of our country. He was a general who helped win the revolution. You know what I'm saying? Like
right.
Lincoln, you know, Civil War, Emancipation. Like they each sort of had their you know, penultimate yes. moment. They were all presidents. But I don't know that they all won champion. Well, they all won their own battles, I suppose. But my thing is, I think it has to go deeper than just the ring. Although the ring, it's a good tiebreaker for sure. I don't know.
I would go my four, and it probably wouldn't be like super popular. And I'm thinking of this on the fly. I think I would go Cooper, Tortorella, Dungy, and. And then I'd probably go Gruden after that. And that means I'd leave Madden off. That means I would leave Arians off.
And it might be me. And I don't think Arians, even though he's won a Super Bowl, and it is about championships. And like I said, they'll build a statue for him outside of Raymond James if he does much else. But he's been here 2 years. Okay.
Right.
And there was talent here. And he failed his first season. You know, he was supposed to try to save Jameis Winston, was unsavable, as it turns out. And then the next year, Tom Brady showed up. Not discounting what Bruce has done, because I think he might win more than one, and I think he might be a Hall of Fame head coach. But right now, I don't disagree at all with Cooper, obviously. He's got to be up there. He's almost a no-brainer. After that, I'm still partial to Tony Dungy,
mm-hmm.
only because I know what his role was in building that franchise, that yes, John Gruden deserves all the credit in the world for going on and winning a Super Bowl. There's no question. But John Gruden was here 6 years and made the playoffs three times, and he didn't win another playoff game after the Super Bowl. You know, not to discount what he did, he won it all, and Dungy
right.
couldn't. But Dungy, to me, is on there. To me, Joe Madden is on there. I Kevin Cash has done everything Joe Madden has done and may have a better record at this point. I don't know. But I know when Kevin Cash got there, the culture of that franchise was not what it was when Joe was there. And I think there's something to be said for, you know, doing something that no one heretofore had done in Tampa Bay, which is you know, create a franchise that is going to be successful and leave it in a place that it wasn't when you found it and is still better than, you know, after you leave. And I think that's why Kevin Cash is having the success he is. Going all the way back to the ownership and all of that. I think it starts there. But to me, Joe was special and made the Rays popular and fun and winners. And, you know, he didn't win a Super Bowl either. So to me, those three guys, I think, have to be in it. We can debate them all to death, and you wouldn't be wrong. There's one more spot. I don't know who gets it. I don't know if it's Torts. It might be. You know,
they were
might be Gruden.
Yeah, no, I tend to lean towards Tortorella, maybe because I'm a hockey guy, but also I covered some of those teams before Tortorella was. I mean,
that's what my point is. Like, he's sort of like Dungy and Madden in that sense.
Yes, yes, and that's why I would give him a lot of credit. I mean, the year, like his first year with the Lightning, they won 27 games. They, you know, it was like they had 69 points. The year before he took over, they had 59 points. This team, like these Lightning teams under Cooper, they have 59 points by like Christmas almost. And then he wins the cup. Now, he didn't do a ton after they won the cup. That's true. You know, they made the playoffs, got knocked out. I don't know they won another series again after they won the cup. So he's very similar to Gruden in that aspect. But it's interesting. It's but Cooper, I think the one thing we can agree on, Rick, is that of the four, I think Cooper's there's no question he's a lock on that.
He might be the only lock. He might have the only one that is a lock. I don't think you could make an argument ever against him at this point. We got more to talk about.
He's not
about.
Done, by the way, either. They're not done.
No. Heck no. I mean, listen.
As long as they have 88 in goal, they got a chance.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. That's about 50 to 75% of the battle right there, my friend.
You're right.
Your peak, your PK looks pretty good.
88% of the battle.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Oh, and he's 26. 26. He's won two. He's got a Hall of Fame resume right now, Tom, if he didn't play any more hockey. Period. And oh, by the way, the five shutouts in series clinching games,
mm-hmm.
That'll work too.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he's got to be end up like Pat. You're going to be comparing him to Patrick Waugh and Martin Brodeur and people like that. Yeah,
no doubt.
Ken Dryden. Yeah,
no doubt. Got more to talk about. I'm going to break up the talk here with this because we're talking about the Lightning. Bolts fans, you can celebrate their back-to-back Stanley Cup wins with a hardcover collector's book by the Tampa Bay Times. It's full of the best stories and photos by my colleagues. 160 pages, perfect way to commemorate just an unbelievable season. Go to bolts.champsbook.com to order. It's usually $39.95, but for a limited time, you can save $10 just by pre-ordering it, and you get it for $29.95. That offer expires August 5th, so go to www.bolts.champsbook.com.
Is there going to be a photo of how Pat Maroon broke the cup or bent it or did whatever he did to it?
Well, as Steve Versnick said, and I stole his line on Twitter today, sure, the cup got smashed just like every other Lightning player at that parade. But listen, my thing, and I made this point to Steve yesterday, isn't there a guy, you have one job, right? You know the guy's name, the blonde guy.
Phil
Pritchard. Okay, so he has one job, right? What's your job? Protect the cup at all costs. Protect the cup, right? Make sure that they don't lose it, that they don't...
It was flat.
It was flat Stanley. That's what it became. It became flat Stanley. Whole side of it, like it was a bowl, and then now it's a D.
You know what the ultimate is? They sent it to Montreal, and it's what a troll.
Hey, Montreal, you have the cup.
Hey, fix our cup and give it back. It's the ultimate. Like,
you can have the cup. You get the damaged cup. But I mean, what? So the end of the year, Phil. Hey, Phil. Yeah, this is the Stanley Cup Association or whoever the hell hires him. Hey, Phil. So how'd it go last year? Oh, it was good. You know, Tampa won again, and then they had a boat parade again. Yeah. They, you know, not COVID this time, but they had a lot of beer and stuff in the fans' mouths. Yeah, they poured a lot of beer and champagne and stuff like that. But The parade went okay. Yeah, no, you know, kept it on the boat. Yeah, it's pretty good. So, what happened? Well, you had one job. You're not getting. I mean, your only evaluation is how you protected the cup.
Well, and it got we smashed. You turned in a receipt for a place in Montreal that's like a auto body shop. What is this receipt for?
Where do you go to get it fixed?
I guess they got a guy. Yeah, they got a guy. They know a guy.
And why is he in Montreal?
Because that's where they invented hockey, or that's where the home of hockey.
I mean, do you go to the place where they fix the hubcaps when they get dented, like when they put it on that little ring and then you kind of pound it out? Like,
I suppose that's what they do with it. I thought. Here's the thing, though. I don't blame Phil Pritchard for this, because you're going to stop you're going to stop these guys. They're out of control. Well,
the Canadians couldn't stop them. So
that's right. They're out of control. You can't stop them. I mean, but how about this too, Rick? How about you hear these stories? Victor Hedman playing with a torn meniscus, and Alex Killorn had a rod put in his leg and tried to play on it, and then
yeah, that's smart guy from Harvard.
Yeah, and then Ryan McDonagh had a broken hand, and Goudreau had a broken hand. I mean,
Tom, you covered a Stanley Cup team, and I just remember Ruslan Fedotenko having his face planted against the wall a couple.
Yes, and having a conversation with me, and then 3 minutes later tried to have the same conversation with me and didn't realize he had the first conversation. I'm not kidding. That really happened.
That's a true story. I know. And I'm not sure.
And the next night scored both goals. Most definitely concussed. Scored two goals the next night.
Right. I'm not sure the NHL had their concussion protocol.
There was no concussion protocol that back then.
But you're right. I mean, it was one of the worst hits I've ever seen. But you covered a team that won the cup, and you know, I mean, it looks like when they take that shot and there's blood running down all their faces, they look like they're coming home from a battle.
Yeah, Marty. Remember, everybody remembers Marty St. Louis' face and Fedotenko's
face. But I mean,
face.
Have you ever known? Did you ever cover a team in the playoffs that paid this physical price for?
I can't remember. At 2014, maybe there were injuries that we didn't know about or never found out about.
Maybe.
And certainly guys were dealing with it. And this happens every year. You hear these stories at the end of the playoffs where, oh, that guy was playing with a cracked ankle and this guy had a separated shoulder. But this year. Now I know in the 2015 team that went to the final, they lost to the Blackhawks. Ben Bishop had a partially torn groin. We all know that Tyler Johnson had a broken wrist. Stamkos was banged up, I believe. But this here, we didn't even mention Kucherov. It had a cracked rib or whatever.
Yeah, cracked rib.
So right. and it was getting injections in between games. He had to go to the hospital because they were worried about puncturing his lung. I don't remember anything like this. I don't think I ever covered anything like this again. Maybe I did. I covered some other Stanley Cup finals that didn't involve the Lightning. The Detroit back-to-back cup teams. I covered them, covered a couple of New Jersey teams that won cups, and you go in the locker room afterwards and you see them and they're all banged up and everything, but I don't remember anything like this.
It was so bad that the general manager, Julian Brisebois, suffered while he was talking about it, a damaged tear duct. And some moisture ran down his face, which he then blamed on a cold. That was, by the way, and I've said this the other night, that's as good, no matter what, watch this, that 3 minutes of that press conference. That's as good a postseason end of press conference, season press conference on any sport that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That is so compelling to listen to him talk about the sacrifice that his players had made and what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, it was really good stuff.
It reminded me a little bit of, there's a documentary that came out a few years ago. HBO did one on the Miracle on Ice team that won in 80.
Yes, yes.
And at the end of it, guys are looking back at just what they went through. And obviously, we knew at the time it was a big deal if you're old enough to remember the 80 Olympics.
And you knew Brooks, too.
Right, right. But at the time we watched it, we knew it was a really big deal because it sort of took over the country and all. But it's the legend's even grown more. And now looking back and to see some of the interviews and on that documentary, people at the end start breaking down about just how special that was. And I'm sure that's a little bit, I'm not comparing this Lightning team to Miracle on Ice, but just the, just what it made, like Julian Brisebois will never forget this. That's what, when Tim Taylor talked about winning the cup, you win the night and you guys will walk in history together.
Forever.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's what, you know, it's interesting because it's a very similar, if not the same language that Tom Brady used before they went on to play the Super Bowl. Where he gathered his players around him, and Tom didn't speak a lot before games. But he said, guys, this is, you know, you win this game, you know, it's about history. It's about being part of something forever. For as long as you live, you know, you're you know, same thing. Like you'll walk together. Like we'll be together as a team and remember it always, you know, in this way.
Can never take it away. Can never take it away.
No matter what you do, you're Super Bowl champion. I saw Dexter Jackson the other day. And, you know, Dexter Jackson didn't have a prolific career in Tampa Bay. He's never going to be on the Ring of Honor. He walked in. The first thing Monty Kiffin said was, hey, the MVP.
Super Bowl MVP.
Always will be a Super Bowl MVP. There's only been 55 of them.
Yeah.
In the world, and he's one of them. By the way, interesting stat. Tom Brady and Dexter Jackson were born like 4 days apart.
That's incredible.
Tom Brady is still playing at age 43 and has won seven Super Bowls.
That's incredible.
And both are Super Bowl MVPs.
Yeah.
One is still very much playing, thank you. And one feels like he hasn't played in a very long time.
That's I know, right? I can't remember. It
almost
seems
15 years or something like that. Right. So, okay, before we get you out, I got two quick questions. You don't have to go long on these.
Okay.
The biggest reason why the Bucs won't repeat is
injuries, and I know that's a cop out answer. But if they were to get banged up, particularly on the offensive line, and that could impact.
Yeah,
some
similar
things,
to the way Kansas City did, or something.
Yeah, and that would be the biggest reason because honestly, Rick, I don't see.
So you're saying there's no reason other.
There's
than
no
that.
Reason. That's right, because I mean injuries. That's who can predict, and you can't prevent them necessarily. But I don't.
If
look
I were
at,
to tell you they were going to have relatively good health,
I think they're in good. I think they at least get there now.
Really,
as far as you know, who they would play. Yeah, you know, we never know during the course of a season how things play out. Teams that you think are going to be good turn out not so good and vice versa.
Right,
but
right.
I don't, it's not as if I look at the NFC and my immediate answer is like, well, I just don't know if they can beat New Orleans. I think New Orleans is going to be, or
mm-hmm. oh, no, all those teams. Well, Green Bay has the Rodgers situation.
Right. And even, if he comes, yeah.
No Breeze, you know. And
right. Right. What. So I don't look at their schedule and say, oh, I don't think they can win enough games to get back to the playoffs or you know, it's fraught with hurdles everywhere. I honestly do think they have the best team in the NFC and, If they can stay relatively healthy, I think they're the favorites.
The Tampa Bay Rays in the second half will win the American League East and possibly repeat as the American League champions if they do what?
If they pitch. I think they're going to hit. I think they're going to hit fine.
We're
the opposite on this, right?
Yeah. I'm absolute the other side. I think they can pitch all day. I think they need another starter. I think if you get in a series, you need three guys to go up against the other best three guys. And I stop at Rich Hill and, you know, Shane McClanahan. Who are we talking about after that, right?
Right.
You need one more solid starter that's going to face the other team's number one starter, you know, two or three times in a seven-game series. So, but having said that, I still have way more faith in their pitching. Tom, I still don't think this team is very solid offensively.
See, I always liked their offense. We talked about this before the season. I liked their offense coming into the season. I liked Austin Meadows. I thought he would have a bounce back year, and he kind of has. At least his power numbers
productive
are pretty good.
In terms of power and RBIs, but
yeah, Brandon Lyle looks like he was starting to get his swing back.
Yes,
I think Randy Arozarena, he was going to have these ups and downs in the first half. I think he'll be okay in the second half. Yandy Diaz, I like his bat. Margot, when he gets back in the lineup, so G-Man Choi, I like.
What about the new guy's going to give him anything? Whether it's
Wander Franco, I think he'll start to get more comfortable now. He'll adjust. They'll adjust to him. He'll have to make another adjustment back. That's typically how it goes. Zanino, he's going to hit 200, but every fourth day, he's going to run into one. It's funny, like, you're probably getting a little.
The last game before the All-Star game, you realize they were nearly no hit, right?
I know, and they will have those games. They will go through a series.
But they had a whole playoff series like that against the Dodgers.
That's true. Now, the Dodgers pitching, I think, had a little bit to do with
that. Hello.
But at the
who are you playing in the playoffs?
That's you're going to run into good pitching. But to get there, to get there, my concern, Rick, is that this lack of starting pitching or this question about starting pitching means you're really going to lean on your bullpen. Right. And I think it's fine to do for three and a half months.
Yeah.
Now you got to do it for another 3 months, and that's where I start to worry that if they're going to start getting some guys back here at some.
Yeah, you hope.
You would hope. You know, Nick Anderson, hopefully at some point. And so that'll help, and maybe they pick up somebody. But here's the funny thing, Rick, is I look at this division, and I keep waiting for Boston to fall off.
They're not going
to
fall off.
And I keep waiting for the Yankees to, like, you know, go on one of those win 22 out of 28. And I don't think that's going to happen either.
I think the Yankees have a chance. Look, they're starting to get a little too separated after the first two teams.
That Sunday, I know it's a one game, but that was a gut punch loss they had the other day.
Like, yeah, it was.
Giving up six runs in a ninth.
Yeah, it really was.
But they were on a verge of a sweep, so of a good team, good Houston team. But I don't know. You think they? Which is more likely, that the Red Sox fall off or the Yankees go on a run?
Yankees go on a run, I think, is more likely.
Yeah.
I think the Red Sox are for real.
I do think the Red Sox are for real, too. I mean,
you know, it's way too we're way too far, you know, into the season to think that what they've done. You know, now, look, the Rays are going to play them more. They played them less of any team, I think, in the American League so far, American League East. So those are going to be great series. And we'll see, right? We'll see the second half of the season as they get together more. Maybe the Red Sox have fattened up on, you know, the Orioles or some of the lower.
Well, and
teams
Steve mentioned this. I did the podcast with Steve a couple of weeks ago, and Steve was mentioning to me that, like, the Rays' schedule's been harder than easier the first half, and it's gonna they're gonna run into some teams here.
Yeah, that they should handle.
That are a little more advantageous to their to
right.
The Rays.
Right. I don't know. It's gonna be wild. I mean, I have all the faith in the world that the Rays will. They're on pace to win 95 games right now, Tom.
It's remarkable,
you know, like they did in 2010. I mean, like, you know what, and it is still, it's not enough to be in first place yet. I think they'll eventually be there.
But if I told you at the end of that last season, when they walked off the field in Texas after losing game six to the Dodgers, that they would have no Charlie Morton, no Blake Snell, and Tyler Glasnow would be shut down after like 2 months or 2.5 months, 3 months, whatever it
you're
is.
You're not winning that many games.
You're going to win 95?
Nope.
That's crazy, right?
I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it. I swear to you. I mean, they find arms, and their bullpen has that like 20-something innings that they haven't given it a lot of run the last 20-something innings before the end of the first half. It's just remarkable to me how they are able to keep finding guys that go out there and pitch. Even Rich Hill, I mean, Rich Hill's been amazing at 41, you know, and it's a product of their defense too. You know, it's not
you know what? That's exactly right. It's a product. I think they play really good baseball, Rick.
Outstanding.
They run the bases well. Which they haven't always done.
Right. You have to beat them. They don't beat themselves.
Yeah, they don't beat themselves. They don't throw the ball away very much. They catch everything that's pretty much hit at them. Mm-hmm. They don't be, and that's where I think Yankees have had a horrible first half in terms of they run themselves out of innings, they throw to the wrong
errors,
bases. Yeah, it's just I think, and again, we were talking about Mount Rushmore coaches and everything and managers and stuff. I think Kevin Cash has done a real good job with this team in terms of just they're aggressive when they should
be. Phenomenal.
It's just really impressive.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a fun second half for the Rays. Of course, the Bucs training camp is just around the corner. That's going to be interesting.
It's hard to believe.
Out there before you know it. Starting, it's here again. I know. And the thing is,
there was no break between hockey and football. That's what's
well, and that's see, this is the thing. All the other seasons got jumbled, you know, because of COVID. Football has not. Football has stayed exactly where football was before and after COVID. They're starting at the same time. You know, they didn't have a preseason last year, per se, and they had a shorter training camp. But at the end of the day, nothing changed with football. But all the other sports got so jumbled that, you know, hockey ended later.
They won two cups in 9 months or something like that.
That's stupid, by
the way. And then the greatest stat of all, Victor Hedman, the only player in NHL history to score in every month of
every month of the year. That's just great.
It'll never be broken. Hopefully, we hope it'll never be broken, because if it is, that means we had another, like, pandemic made everything crazy.
Exactly. Derek Jeter scored in every month of the year too, but that was a different stat.
Boom.
Anyway, so what's we got? Pointer.org. If you want to check out the latest newsletter that Tom has Monday through Friday, you can do that. Lots to talk about. Lots going on, right? With ESPN always. And. Well, we're ramping up for another election cycle, aren't we?
Oh, stop. I can't. That's
is that too early? Too soon?
Yes. No, it's not, but it is. Like, I can't. I'm barely recovered from 2020. We're going to
There's also
again.
More books coming out, right? There seems
there's a ton of Trump. Reading. So there's two books came out on Trump this week.
Yeah.
And then another one comes out, that the one that everybody's really waiting
now,
on.
Now, do they mail these to you? Do you read these or do you read excerpts?
I've gotten one of them and then they'll feed you excerpts. And
does
stuff
the author make themselves available?
They do. Or? They usually do if you want it. It depends on who it is. I had the one that everyone's really looking forward to is two Washington Post writers. They have one coming out next Tuesday. And
is that Dossie and who's it?
No, it's and see, I knew you'd pin me on the names here, but it's
that's all right. No, I won't hold you to it.
Yeah, we'll but it's up, a man and a woman, and it's coming out next Tuesday. It gets released. But an excerpt has already been released on that, and it's
pretty salacious. I've seen some of those outtakes. So anyway, he's never not busy, but he's always gracious enough to join us here on Sports Day Tampa Bay, as he does. Very often, and did twice this week. Thanks, Tommy. Appreciate it, man.
All right. See you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.